The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, greetings and welcome to the show. Thank you for tuning in to Dose of Leadership. Thank you for tuning in for this special edition, this special episode of Dose of Leadership, where we continue our Equity Bank series focusing on entrepreneurship and leadership. And today we focus on Ronnie Leonard. We highlight her life, her career. She is the CEO and president of Balco Incorporated. Now, Balco was founded in Wichita in 1957 for the purpose of supplying architectural products to the commercial building industry. And Ronnie started with them in 1996 as the CFO, and she was the CFO for 16 years before she got promoted in 2012 to the CEO. And I love her story because at the time she was giving the position or offered the position of CEO, she didn't see herself as the CEO. And I love it when people have this humble, teachable spirit coupled with this intensity of will. I talk about it all the time on the show. And Ronnie definitely has it. She didn't see herself as a CEO. She authentically and vulnerably talks about her limiting beliefs in this episode, which I think is a powerful thing. I wish more CEOs like Ronnie would have that mentality, that attitude, that leadership philosophy, that it's not about them, it's about the people. And I think that that humble, teachable spirit coupled with this intensity to succeed, to always do the right thing, to perform everything. This is what I like about Ronnie, and I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation with her. She definitely understands leadership. She definitely understands all aspects of company operations, production, finance, executive management. But again, the key thing here is she understands leadership and life and the importance of it in every aspect of your life. So I really think you're going to enjoy this conversation with Ronnie Leonard. Again, the show is brought to you by our friends at Equity Bank. Equity Bank, I believe, is one of those special banks where they understand what it takes to start and grow a business. That's what I like about them. That's why I'm so happy and privileged and honored to have them sponsor this series, because it's been exciting to watch them grow into one of the fastest growing banks in the Midwest. Equity Bank is now listed on the NASDAQ exchange and has locations all across Kansas, as well as Oklahoma, Missouri, and Arkansas. I'm excited to see what the next 10 years is going to bring to Equity Bank. Clearly, this team knows how to lead for growth. And so if you feel like your current bank is more of a follower than a leader, then I want you to check out my friends at Equity Bank and work with the bank that really understands your needs. That's definitely what Equity Bank stands for. Thanks for listening to this episode. Now let's join our conversation with Ronnie Leonard, the CEO and president of Balco Incorporated, on this special leadership series brought to you by Equity Bank. Ronnie, I'm so excited to meet you. I got this call last night to do this interview, so it was kind of a last minute. But man, I tell you, I'm excited to sit down with you already. And we got some leadership gems to share with everybody. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You know, fellow Wichita State Shocker, you graduated from there. You've been at Wichita your whole life?
I have been in Wichita my whole life. I am born and raised here. I am one of 11 children.
Where are you in the mix?
Front, I am middle? Number two. And funny story. My parents had six children in 5.5 years.
Oh, my.
Took a 12-year break. The Pope came to the U.S. in 1979, and they had five more children.
No way. A 12-year gap in between.
Exactly.
What? It's like it's two separate families
That's
almost.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
So the oldest is how old and the youngest is how old?
Well, my older sister and I are actually the same age right now until tomorrow. And then she will be 54 and I will still be 53. So
wow.
Anyway, so yeah. So it's I come from a great family, learned a lot, grew up here in Wichita, and I was first of anyone in my family to attend college.
Really?
And my parents, you know, there were still 9 children left at home, and I was motivated to get out at 18. So worked 3 jobs, and my parents hadn't gone to college. And so my friends were talking about what college they were going to go to. So I said, oh, well, I'm going to go to college. And they're like, well, where are you going to go? And I'm like, well, Wichita State. And so I showed up there on my own, you know. It's funny because I have 4 children now who are 2 have graduated from college, 2 who are still in. And I can't imagine them just showing up at university and knowing what to do and how to navigate that. So
Just went there all on your own initiative and just went up and showed up there.
Just showed up and just picked something and I decided I was going to be an accountant, not because I loved it.
Just because.
I wanted to have a job when I graduated. And so I picked it and the rest, it's turned out okay.
Yeah. So what was, it's interesting. So here you are, I'm mid-80s. What was the dream then? I've got to get out of this house. There's too many people. There's too many human beings in this square footage. What was the dream?
That was exactly right. I grew up in a small, community north of Wichita, and that was exactly right. I wanted to get out. My mom and dad were, as my mom liked to say, always robbing Peter to pay Paul, and living paycheck to paycheck.
I can't imagine.
And and that's not a life I wanted. Mm-hmm. It was chaos, and I wanted control and security. So the way to get that, I felt, was to go to college and to get an education. And that is one thing I learned from my parents is that you just have to work hard.
Yeah.
And so in that respect, they set me on the right path.
So we're in college and you picked accounting and you became a CFO. So obviously you didn't waver or change majors. You stuck with accounting. I mean, as you got into it, were you like, yeah, this is me, this is who I am? Or was it just something you felt like you had to do?
It was more something I had to do. I mean, I just picked it, not knowing anything. Mm-hmm. My kids now, my kids that are in school, they worry about, oh, I don't know what I want to do. And mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't know what I wanted to do either. And I just picked something and it turned out okay.
Right.
And, I think there's a misconception that you have to have your whole life planned out.
Great point,
as these kids that are going off to school, and that's just not the case. And it turned out I do like to do puzzles, which really that's what accounting is. It's puzzle solving.
That's right.
Everything has to fit, and so in that respect, it's been a good field for me.
Yeah. So probably intuitively, I mean, you kind of knew what your strengths were, and for whatever reason, you were probably drawn to accounting because you knew, that's how you were kind of wired, maybe. I don't know.
Right, right. Well, I knew I couldn't be a teacher or,
right.
A nurse or a doctor. It was like, no, that was not how I was wired, as you say. Definitely more numbers and control and things fitting together.
So. Yeah, right. Typical things I'd want to see in a CFO or a CPA or accountant. Right, I see that. I get that. And so how did we find ourselves as a CEO of a manufacturing company for the last 6 years? How did we get there?
Well, interestingly enough, while I was in college, I was in a sorority at Wichita State, and one of our alumni asked me if I wanted to do part-time tax during the school year, and they would work around my schedule. And I said, sure. So I did that. And after a year, they said, well, do you just want to come work for us full time? So I didn't have to interview when everyone else was interviewing and being all worried about, were they going to, get a job? And so I just kind of fell into it. And so then when I started there, they were like, well, you have to sit for the CPA. And I'm like, oh, okay. That had never been a goal of mine, but because of where I ended up, it was just expected.
Right.
So I ended up taking the CPA and passed it and then ended up going to work for a client as a controller, did that for 5 years. And then I got the opportunity to come to Balco 22 years ago in the capacity as CFO, did that for 16 years, and now I'm the CEO after 6 years.
So we were talking pre-recording that they offered you the job and you initially turned it down. Tell me about that.
Right. Well, at Balco, we're a relatively small company, about 80 employees. So when you work for a company of that size, you wear a lot of different hats.
Sure.
So I was heavily involved, not only in the finance side, but in the production side, in HR, in dealing with the law firms and the banks and all across the board. And our CEO was retiring, and our board asked me if I was interested in taking on the CEO position. And I thought about it, and I said, no, I don't think so. You know, I think I'm good in the role I'm in, and think that's where I contribute best. And so I went home and I told my husband, and he said, you what? What do you mean you turned it down? He said, you do that role now. And I said, well, you know, but, you know, I'm risk averse, and I don't like, you know, I feel like I'm good at this. I'm good at what I do, and I don't have all this knowledge of the sales side and the strategic planning and things like that. Anyway, he bit his tongue and was very supportive and said, you know, ultimately it was my decision, but, you know, he was disappointed that I hadn't considered it. So fortunately, a few months later, they couldn't get anyone to move to Wichita that was willing to take the position for what they were willing to pay. And they came back and said, would you reconsider? Would you take the CEO position? And at that point, I decided I didn't need to know everything, that I did have good people that I was surrounded by that had the sales expertise and that there wasn't any reason that I couldn't continue to be successful in the CEO role.
Yeah, I love that story for a whole host of reasons. First of all, I love the because what I sensed is when you originally turned it down, I love how the limiting beliefs that you had. I'm sensing there was a huge part of you that probably said, you know, I think I'd like to do it, but there was probably a lot of head trash noise telling you, who are you thinking you could do this, right?
And, that's exactly right.
And it took me a long time, too, to figure out that we all have, no matter what levels of success we've seen somebody or levels of significance that we've seen somebody accomplish, they still deal – even today. I mean, I deal with it. I'm sure you deal with it even mm-hmm. to this day, right? And it's funny how your husband surely saw – you know, he was – are you kidding? Why'd you turn it down? Because he knew you. He saw that side of you that knew that probably wanted to take on this challenge, but you just didn't believe it for whatever reason. So
right.
You had 4 months to ruminate, pray, think about whatever. And you're like, you know, maybe I, you know what I mean? And then how did you come to that in that 120 days that, or 160 days, did you figure out, yeah, okay, I do want to take this on. I mean, what happened? You know, what made you realize, you know what? I am surrounded by smart people. I don't have to have all the answers. What do you think that caused
right.
you to realize that?
Well, number one, my husband's support was one thing, but also I have a true love for the company and
right.
our employees, and we had weathered some difficult CEOs, not the gentleman I was replacing, but prior to his
yeah.
tenure, we'd weathered some difficult CEOs, my fellow coworkers actually gave me that courage and encouraged me and said, essentially, we'll follow you. We believe in you. We know that you have the best interests of the company at heart. You've been here through thick and thin. And if you will take it on, you know, we support you and we're behind you. And so that was a big reason why I agreed to take it.
I love that. And what a confidence. I think that's, you know, maybe that was the first time, but to hear somebody say that, to realize, man, to realize the influence that you have over the – we don't see it in ourselves around time. I always contend that we don't realize how much influence we actually have. I think sometimes in what I see from you, sitting across from you, that you do have this intensity of will about you, but you have this humble, teachable spirit. And it's that combination that I think makes great leaders. I see that in you just from sitting across
from
you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well,
I think we should be friends
that's right.
after this.
But I'm thinking – And I say this on the show a lot, and I didn't come up with that Venn diagram myself. That came to me when I read Jim Collins' Good to Great, 18 years ago, where he talks about that type of leadership, that intensity of will with that humble, teachable spirit. And it's been a guide that I've, when I coach and even myself, I try to, that's the sweet spot that I seem to hit. Because when you look at, and I don't know why we do, I think I know why we do this, but even from the playground when you're in grade school and they're picking team captains, it's always the gregarious, type A personality that do this. When you're coaching your little league, your kid's little league team, and they're looking for someone to volunteer for the snack parent, there's always some guy that, oh, do it, and we shy away from that, I'm an introvert. You seem like kind of an introvert. I don't know you that well, but you've got it, you're introverted, but you've got an intensity about you. You got an authenticity about you and a vulnerability about you that exudes strength, right? It's that dichotomy that I think is so powerful that I don't think a lot of leaders, the type of leadership that I'm talking about that you seem to exude. I don't know. I said a lot there, but what do you think about what I just said?
Well, that's all very complimentary, so thank you. But, I think you're right. I mean, I think sometimes we lack faith in ourselves, and that sometimes, we need to stop listening to that little voice in the head, because we're constantly bombarded with messages that we're not good enough and that there's someone better and that we're somehow lacking. In reality, that's just not the case, and that's one thing that I've learned is, and, as we were talking earlier, everyone brings value, and regardless of the level, and it's important that they know that. And I think that's one way that some of our leaders are failing, those who are following us, is that they don't show appreciation or value at every level.
Yep.
Because none of us woke up being in a leadership role. I mean, right. Some of us are more fortunate than others and have lucked, have had good luck. I think that's something that we can do better as leaders.
I agree. And I think it's important to think if we want to be, I'm putting myself in your position and offering that role and think, and if I didn't see myself as a leader for whatever reasons, I've had that conversation with myself many times, like, who am I? Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to figure myself out, and I'm supposed to teach this guy. And I got to get this figured out before, but it's kind of like being a parent. It'd be ideal if you were a perfect parent by the time you had kids, but you don't have the choice. You have to change the tires. The flat tires are going 70 miles down the runway. Down the highway. You don't have a choice, right?
That's exactly right. And we tell our kids all the time, oh yeah, we're screwing you up. when you have your own kids, you can screw them up, but parenting doesn't come with a manual, and all kids are different. So what works for one does not work for another.
Exactly.
And it's the same in the work environment. I mean, you have different age groups, you have different, backgrounds, different socioeconomic levels, and there are different things that motivate people. And, so the key, I think, to success, not only for the company, but for the employees, is to figure out how do you motivate them so that they can be successful.
Yeah. And that's interesting, because I think it's part of our task or our obligation as leaders is when we're put in this role. Again, it's not to have all the answers, not to fulfill some image that we have, and that image we have is probably flawed, I got to be like John Wayne, or I got to be what? No, you got to be authentically you. And you're right. It's like, how can I add value to this transaction? And getting those individuals that we're accountable for, getting them to think that way too. How can I add value to this? How can I add value? To me, it's always about adding value in a selfless way. Not in the way that, the key to be influential is to add value to your life. Well, it's selfish for me to go, hey, look at all the value I'm adding you, Ronnie. Validate that I'm a good guy, right?
Right.
It's selflessly adding that value and pulling yourself back. And that's what I see in you as a strength. And that's probably in spades when the people are telling you, what, you've been doing it. Because you were down in the, like you said, a small company, you're down in the trenches. Mm-hmm. Digging ditches with them, figuratively,
Right.
Counting inventory.
Yeah.
Sweeping the floors, doing whatever. It's what I call actively leading how you want things to be. Sometimes people, they put on the leadership t-shirt or the CEO shirt hat, and they feel like they got to be somebody different. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably why you said no initially, is because, I'm not cut out for that.
Well, right. Well, you know, and I think, I used to always think, especially, early in my career, you would look and read, Fortune magazine and things like that, and just think, oh my gosh, these people are so successful. Right. They are so smart. They have all of the answers. Right. And, probably 9 times out of 10, they just surrounded themselves with good people. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know that there are some brilliant, brilliant people. But,
it's almost like you need other people. Like you need people like your husband and other people that love you in your life to remind you how much value you bring. Because that humble, teachable spirit, just by having that nature, you don't like promoting yourself,
right?
And so you need people, just like you're reminding, man, I love having you on the team. This is what you do great, Nat. Mm-hmm. And reminding them the value they bring to the table, right?
Right. Well, and I will consider my life to have been a success if I can help someone else to reach their potential.
Right.
I mean, that's more valuable to me than a raise. I mean, if I can get someone, like I said, I grew up in a blue collar community north of Wichita, and where a lot of people didn't go to college. Mm-hmm. Some people didn't finish high school. And so if I can take someone and that I work with and be, help facilitate, that mindset that, hey, you can do, can do whatever you want. You just have to put your mind to it. And, and work hard and what can we do to help you? And if they can take that advice and be successful and make a change in their life for the better, then that to me would be a life well lived.
Hey, we're about halfway through the conversation, but I wanted to take the time to talk about my good friends, the sponsor here of this special series at Equity Bank. Have you ever noticed that most business bankers seem to really understand just one thing? It's banking, right? And not a lot about business. It makes sense since most banks were built generations ago and now they're often run by caretakers, not business builders. Well, it's not the case here at Equity Bank. The bankers at Equity Bank didn't inherit a bank generations ago. They built one of their own. They know that building something takes expertise, vision, and hard work. And over the past decade, they've built one of the region's fastest growing banks by working side by side with customers, with entrepreneurs, with leaders in communities all throughout Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. Recently, Equity Bank was listed on the NASDAQ exchange, which gives them even greater capabilities to take on those big deals that growing businesses need to keep on growing. So if you're tired of talking to bankers who've never really ran or owned or built a business, then I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised when you talk to my friends at Equity Bank. Thanks for listening to this show. Let's get back to the conversation, this unique and special series on leadership and entrepreneurship brought to you by my friends at Equity Bank. When you really swim in the leadership pool, it is sacrificial. I mean, it's completely sacrificial. You sacrifice your time, your rights, your freedom.
Right.
Right?
Right. And ultimately, I always tell them, I'm the woman to blame, right?
Right.
I mean,
the accountability it's heavy.
If things go down.
It's heavy. Right?
And that's what I think keeps me up at night,
is
that we've got, 80 families that are relying ultimately on some of the decisions that I'm making.
Death. Those are life and death decisions, right?
Right.
And it's a heavy burden. And you might think, well, my God, why would I even want to do this? And you may still even do that occasionally. But I mean, at the same time, it's that sacrifice. Those that truly do sacrifice, those are the ones that get to experience, I don't know, what's the resurrection power that comes with that of significance, right? Of what you just said, the kind of the emotional piggy bank, that's what drives you, right? And I think that is that's the power of successful leaders and the legacy that you leave behind. And it feels weird to talk about it because like, oh, who am I to leave a legacy? Well, you're going to leave one whether you like it or not.
Right.
So you better put some intention behind it.
Yeah. I'd like, when I'm gone, I'd like people to say, she was a good person.
Sure.
And she did good things. And
you made the campsite better than you found it.
Exactly.
Right?
That's exactly.
Made it better than you found it. Oh, I love it. I love everything you're saying there. It's interesting to see, you know, particularly where you're at now. You're in your mid-50s. Where do you think this is going to go? I mean, where, if you could sit there and kind of look ahead, where would you want it to go? On the leadership front.
On the leadership front, really, I think, you know, I would like to see it, you know, probably taken out to the community a little bit more. I think that some of our, you know, our students that are attending schools, attending some of the public schools here, you know, that maybe don't have the role models either in their school environment or in their home environment. I'd like to be able to make a difference in perhaps in their lives. You know, like I said, I'm very fortunate. I come from a very loving and supportive family. Crazy, but loving right. and supportive. And I realize that I hit the lottery when it comes to that. I mean, we didn't have much money, and we always had someone. There was always someone staying with us, be it. A relative, be it a neighbor, hitchhikers. I mean, God watched out for us growing up. But there was just, we were surrounded by love. And I know that that is wanting in our society now.
I think you're right. And it's just like, and if we can take it out, to me, I think if we can get that 16-year-old, that 17-year-old to start thinking what it means to think and act like a leader, because we get – I mean, even when we were 16 to 17, we didn't know what it was, and we were just so wrapped up in whatever, trying to buy beer with a fake ID or whatever. That was our problem.
I was just trying to work and pay for gas.
Yeah, right. Like, trying to find money to fill up, you know, put 2 gallons of gas in your car.
Right.
So you could at
least... Well, my first car payment was $49.50 a month.
Yeah.
For a 77 rusted out Mustang. I mean, but I had a 2-year loan on it, and you had to work, and mm-hmm. you know, and that was at 16, or you were walking.
That's right.
And so I was motivated, but anyway, times are a little different now.
They are a little different, but I think it seems scary because as the father of 4 daughters, and I look at that, and I just, even now, and me and my wife were talking this morning about, it was funny, we were at dinner, I don't know, a couple weekends ago, and we're at the table I was sitting at, we could see these homecoming kids coming into the restaurant. And they were sitting right across. We were at a booth at the back of the restaurant, and we're at a table. So this 6 kids, 3 girls, 3 boys, dressed to the nines, mom's coming in taking pictures of the big night or whatever. And then the parents left to eat their dinner. And then they all – nobody talked to each other. They all 6 of them got on their phones.
Right.
And they spent the entire evening at dinner on their phones.
Right.
And I was like, wow, things are really different. And, you know, and we get so – and even listen to my daughters and talk about what – the kids are talking about what's important. And I'm like, I don't mean to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but if they just understood the value of this kind of sacrificial leadership, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Of giving back to the community. And it's all tied – to me, it's all tied together from
right.
the family to yourself individually to get over the head trash mm-hmm. to add value to every transaction, right? That, to me, that is the secret sauce.
Right. Well, I believe that – and I was raised this way – that – you know, all of the blessings that we have is so that we can be a blessing to someone else.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what it is. It's not mine. You know, I have the use of it while I'm here, but it's not, you know, it's not, oh, I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. I just happened to win the lottery by being born in the United States.
That's right.
Being born in the state of Kansas, being born parents, you know, a two-parent household.
Yes.
You know, having, you know, loving siblings and family and roof over my head and running water and drinkable water. I mean, that had nothing to do with my hard work. I won the lottery in those respects. And there's just so many other ways that is the case. And
I agree with you. It's the obligation of making it better than you. That is the one obligation we have. And again, I think why leadership is important is to make the place better than mm-hmm. you found it. Otherwise, you're shaming the angels, right?
Well, to whom much is given, much is expected.
Exactly.
Right.
Right.
So, and that's not why we do it. But there's just that knowledge that there's, you know, it comes with some expectations as to what you're going to do with it.
It does. Very good. Again, father, four daughters. I love on this show. I love talking to women who have in leadership roles that are traditionally you don't find a lot of women in, unfortunately. Talk to me a little. I'm always trying to talk to them and show them. I've worked with some, and I contend to this, that some of the best leaders I've ever worked for have been women. I honestly think women, and the type of leadership, of course, that I think is needed, is women, I think, naturally gravitate it more than men. I don't know if that's wiring or if it's the way the society is. Or what, I don't. At this point, I don't care. I can't figure it out. I just know from my experience, like some of the best leaders that I have worked have been women. Some of the worst leaders I've worked for have been women too. I'll share with you more why I think it's both, but I want to get your take on what do you think when you hear me say that?
Not surprised, because I too have worked with some great women. I've worked with some not so great women, and you know, being a woman now, you know, in this business climate, I think we definitely have much more of a voice than we have in the past. You know, once again, I'm very fortunate, you know, to have been born in a time when I haven't had to fight like women before me,
right,
for my seat at the table, for my voice. So in that respect, I'm very thankful for the women who've gone before me and who fought that fight. But I think, you know, As I mentioned earlier, you know, I read the Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, and it's funny. I have a 28-year-old daughter who is a CPA and a controller at a company down in Lima, Peru. She speaks Spanish fluently.
Wow.
So she, you know, read this book and encouraged me to read it. And one of the things that I'm known for at our office is I like to bake. And I bake cookies. If we've got a department that is doing well and or has, you know, hit some milestone, I will bake homemade cookies and bring them to work. And she's like, "Mom, haven't you read that book? You're not supposed to do that. That's a feminine role, and you're setting yourself up, and for people not to value you." And I said, "You know, I don't put value in myself based on what a book is saying. I mean." They appreciate it. They know that I'm making this. Number one, they know I enjoy it. But number two, it's a sign of appreciation. They know that I took time out of my day. I could have gone to the store and bought cookies. It's not the same as making homemade cookies with butter and, you know, and Nestle's chocolate chips and peanut butter M&Ms. And they just know that. And so I'm not, you know, maybe I'm not a typical female CEO, that's just.
But you're hitting on the point exactly why I said, and this is why I think where I've seen the not so great leaders I've worked with who are women, the ones who are really fantastic. You're hitting on right there. It's all about the authenticity and transparency thing, and not even it's almost like I don't want to say ignore the gender piece, but if you have to come in and remind me that you're, you know, if you're constantly reminding me. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like this. If I fly for the airlines, right? Mm-hmm. And the saying is, if I am the captain, I have to keep reminding you that I'm the captain, I'm not a very good captain.
Right.
Right?
That's a good analogy.
And it's kind of the same thing what I mean when we talk about these roles as CEOs. And I think – and I'm speaking as a man, as a father of four daughters. I want my daughters to be the most, you know, kick ass, you know, take them by the throat, don't take no prisoners, women that they can possibly be. But at the same time, I want them to be – and what I mean by that is you get there by being authentically you, right?
Right.
And you don't try to be something that you're not, I guess is my point. And the one I see where people – and it's the same with men. It's just like if I – it's the same if I see an introverted leader try to be John Wayne,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a failure. If I
right.
see a woman in a leadership role try to be one of the boys
mm-hmm. –
then that's just setting yourself – what does that even mean, by the way? And then why are we even wasting your energy? Just be you. And by you baking the
right.
cooking, that's just who I am,
right?
Right.
Right.
Does that
yeah.
make sense?
Well, and I think sometimes women can have a chip on their shoulder.
Well, yeah, and that's
and
what
so
I meant by being one of the boys.
And so then that puts up a wall.
Uh-huh.
And so then you don't get the cooperation and you immediately have put up a barrier to future success.
Yep.
I mean, because it's like, oh, like I have to, you know, I have to walk on eggshells because I don't, you know.
Yeah. Now I can't have the difficult conversation with you,
right?
Because I'm like, oh, what do I say? I don't want to, you know.
Is she going to cry?
Right. It's kind of like I want my wife to be able to tell me if I'm about to walk out the door that I got bad breath.
Right. Right.
Because she's doing it because she loves me.
Right.
And we need to have that same as a working relationship. You want people as a CEO to be authentic and honest with you. And the only way that you can do that is open this up and show your heart and be you, right?
Right. Just have to be yourself.
Be yourself.
That's exactly right.
Anyway. It sounds so easy when we're talking about it here at Ground Zero, you know, 0 miles an hour. But as we're faced as human beings, we're weird and we're dysfunctional, and you get in the work environment and weird dysfunctional things happen. But I don't know. You just seem to me like you exude this authenticity, this transparency. I think that has been probably a huge element to your success. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think, I think that has helped me. Being an accountant, maybe I'm not one to put on airs. Probably not overly dramatic. I mean, what you see is what you get. I think that people can tell authenticity, and they can tell when you're being fake.
Yeah.
And if people think you're fake, they're not going to get behind you, and they're not going to follow you. And you might be successful for a little while, but not long term. And so you're either you're probably going to be replaced, or you're going to have to be happy somewhere else. Because it takes a team for a company to be successful. And in that role, they've got to be able to get behind someone that they believe in.
Yeah. What would you tell that 16-year-old sophomore girl who's sitting there trying to navigate her world in this kind of weird social media world? And what would you tell them?
Well, you know, it's my youngest is 19. I've got a 19-year-old daughter and a 21-year-old daughter in college right now. And, they're so serious.
I know, right?
Like, you know, my husband and I are like, chill out.
No kidding.
You know, it's college. Enjoy yourself, you know. But they get so worked up, and you know, because they're constantly being exposed to through social media that all of these other people have these perfect lives, and I'm like, no one has a perfect life, and that is one thing that at our home, it is a big no-no. We do not have phones at dinner. We sit down and we eat dinner together when we're all together. Phones are not a part of the equation, and I think that is one thing that our younger generation is missing out on is that personal interaction. But, you know, it's funny. You see that in people our age.
I know.
I mean, I've attended meetings where you've got a world-renowned speaker and you've got leaders here in the community who are sitting there looking at their phone.
Isn't
and
that
I'm
crazy?
Like, oh my gosh, shut it off. This guy is, or this woman is saying tremendous things and you're not even paying attention.
Right.
I mean, but it's a habit.
It is.
And it's a habit for everyone. And it's just something that we have to stop doing. And
I agree.
And I think we are finding the negative side to that because it's isolating,
I think.
I think for those who maybe lack confidence, I think it really is a demoralizing because
it
they
really
feel
is.
Like, I can never measure up to this.
Right.
And that's just not the case.
It is. It's so true. I mean, it's kind of like that example I gave of watching the homecoming kids. But even me and my wife were saying that where's the interaction, you know? And I remember when I was 15 and 16, you know, and I went on a date and had a boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, we're passing those. But we're talking, you know, and they're like, oh, he's my boyfriend. I'm like, you guys haven't even met. He goes to this school and you go to this. And you're like, how do you do? You haven't even met each other. Oh, were we talking? I'm like, what? I don't know. Anyway, it's crazy.
We're talking. That's
yeah,
it.
We're
talking.
Talking right?
Yeah.
No, I just love this conversation. What's next? We haven't talked much about Balco, but give us a plug about what you guys do and where you guys are going and what you're excited about for the future.
Okay. Well, Balco, we are a manufacturer of architectural building products for the commercial construction industry. And the business started in 1959 in a gentleman's garage, Claude Balzer's garage, and it's grown.
Here in Wichita started?
Here in Wichita, started here in Wichita. and it's grown to a multi-million dollar company, and we sell products all throughout the world. We sell, we have products in the Hong Kong Convention Center, at the Palms Resort in Dubai, San Francisco Airport, Seattle Seahawks Stadium, the Statue of Liberty. We just shipped some material to the Statue of Liberty.
Awesome.
The African American Museum in Washington, D.C. So our products make buildings safer.
Yeah.
And it allows one of our biggest product lines is an expansion joint cover. It allows a building to expand and contract due to seismic conditions or thermal expansion and contraction. And as you know, there's a lot of earthquakes going on here in Kansas. And that's part of the building code. Not so much here, but definitely in the larger seismic areas like California, in the Middle East, in New Zealand, Australia, Mexico, you know, where there's a lot of seismic activity going on. And we sell all throughout the world to make buildings safer.
I bet you it's fun to travel with you. You probably geek out when you go in and think, hey, look, there's our handrail.
That's it. Well, yeah, my kids are like, Mom, get off the floor. Right. Because we're, you know, because we are in airports, we're in schools,
right.
we're in high rises, we're at a lot of our stuff is out in Las Vegas. And anyway, anything with a large concrete footprint as far as a building is concerned. And so, yeah, that's exactly right. So, but on the other hand, they're always like, wow, Mom, you have stuff in the, you have stuff in the Pentagon. I'm like,
right.
Yeah, we do.
It's pretty cool. And you can think that, you know, and just point to something tangible that you've created here. And it's fun for me because, I mean, you don't even hear about this. You know, this happening right here in our own hometown, and you don't even know. You know what I mean? It's like
right.
People don't
well,
know anything
it's,
about it.
It's all those little component parts, mm-hmm. you know. It's and we're definitely in a niche portion of the construction industry. But, you know, we bring value, and we – and ultimately, you know, and that's where we have to – you know, it's important that we are a stable and viable company because we do provide products that ensure the safety of the occupants. And so in that respect, I mean, that's another thing that keeps me up at night. We've got to be making sure that we are doing everything that we can to build the best product so that, you know, so that our fellow citizens are safe.
I love that. And I love how you articulated that. And it's probably pretty fun for you as a CEO. I contend that if you want to get, doesn't matter what the product is, get people engaged. If people feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, what they're doing, they're going to be more engaged, right?
Right.
And the way you articulated it, it's easy to wrap my arms around that mm-hmm. kind of mission, right? Because you look at the products by themselves like, oh, this isn't sexy.
Right.
But then you put that around, right?
It's definitely not.
Right. But then you put that context, right?
Right?
And I think that is the role of a leader and a CEO is to paint that picture. Yeah, okay, this handrail or this concrete, whatever, you know, this isn't mm-hmm. sexy. But look what we do, right?
Right.
And that is, I think, your primary, one of you as your CEO, your primary role is to continually convey that message, right?
Right. And that's exactly right.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I've loved this conversation. I hope you got some value out of it yourself.
Well,
it's been
I appreciate
fun,
it. Thank you for the opportunity. It's been a very good experience, and I appreciate that.
How can people reach out to you, find more about you and Balco?
Well, if they want to find out more about our products, they can log on to our website, www.balcousa.com. And they can see all of the features of the products we offer, as well as some of the applications that that our products go into, and find out a little bit more about our team and what we do, and you know, hopefully we'll continue to grow and thrive and be around for another 60 years. That's our goal.
I love it. Thanks for coming on the show. It's
all
been
right.
So much fun.
Appreciate
Thanks.
It. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to this special entrepreneurial and leadership series, The Dose of Leadership, brought to you by my friends at Equity Bank. Make sure to subscribe to Dose of Leadership where you can hear more great stories in this unique and special series. If you're enjoying this podcast, please take a listen to all of my Dose of Leadership podcasts and all of my episodes and see why Fortune, Entrepreneur, and Inc. magazine all recommend this as a must listen. Dose of Leadership features candid conversations with amazing guests, leading high-performing experts and organizations, large and small, all over the world. Find Dose of Leadership on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, and go ahead and visit doseofleadership.com where you can find out more information about the show, myself, my speaking engagements, my keynotes, live seminars, and my mastermind events. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great day.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.